Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello, and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates, episode by episode, the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Corporal Captain Rob Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is Lieutenant Colonel Russell Burbage. Hi, Russell. Welcome back.
Good morning. Hi, everybody.
Good morning. Glad to have you back on the show. Of course, you were my first guest on season one, so now we're back for season two. We're here to talk about episode 30, which is LIP, Local Indigenous Personnel. The original air date is October 27th, 1973. It's written by Carl Kleinschmidt, Larry Gelbart, Lawrence Marks, directed by William Wiard. And we already know your secret origin with MASH. You know, you're your biggest fan as I am, so let's get right to the episode. Hawkeye is busy trying to make time with a new nurse, Lieutenant Hoffman, played by Corrine Camacho. After the movie, they wander back to her tent, but she rebuffs him, offering him a handshake. Hawkeye looks at her hand in disbelief. Back in the swamp, Hawkeye is drowning his sorrows when a Corporal Walker comes by asking for Hawkeye's help. Walker has a wife, actually a Korean woman, who would only sleep with him if they were married, so Walker had the cook perform the ceremony, and a baby. The baby is sick, and Hawkeye diagnoses it as colic. Walker also tells him another problem he has. He's being shipped out in a few weeks, and he doesn't want to leave his wife and kid behind. He asks Hawkeye for help. Hawkeye gets Henry involved, who warns Hawkeye that the Army takes forever to clear all the paperwork, and it's a red tape nightmare. The next night, Hawkeye has another date with Lieutenant Hoffman, and he is smitten. She's flirty, talks about loves doing things outdoors, as well as golfing. Hawkeye's in love. The next day, Lieutenant Willis, Burt Young, from CID arrives to look into the Walker matter. He needs to talk to Hawkeye as well as Walker and starts asking about Hawkeye's past. This drags Hawkeye from another date with Lieutenant Hoffman, and he is none too happy about that. But he dutifully answers Willis's questions, and in so doing lets it slip that Walker and the woman have a baby. Willis flatly denies the marriage application on the spot. Hawkeye makes apologies to Lieutenant Hoffman, asking to give him just a little more time. He and Trapper decide to frame Willis. They drug his drink, knocking him out. He wakes up covered in lipstick and women's undergarments, with Hawkeye and Trapper promising they took pictures. Willis thinks they're bluffing, but he can't be sure. After suggesting they're going to make a case either way, Willis gives in to Hawkeye and Trapper, approves the marriage, and hot-foots it out of the 477th. Hawkeye finally makes it back to Lieutenant Hoffman, and she asks him what kept him. He tells her about Walker, the wife, and the baby. Hawkeye then wants to return to romance, but Hoffman keeps asking questions. She finally asks, incredulously, "So you had to arrange a marriage between one of our guys and a gook?" Hawkeye, his romantic interest rapidly fading, tries to assuage her, but when she starts talking about our people, Hawkeye pulls away. He then gives her a handshake, saying he wants his original one back. He tells her that, even with all her beauty and charm, there are some unappetizing ideas in there, and I don't think I can take the mix. Lieutenant Hoffman is incensed at this and asks, "Is that all?" Hawkeye, while stealing back the bottle of wine he brought, says no, offering her a big fat raspberry as he leaves the tent. Later, Walker and his wife are genuinely married by Father Mulcahy, with Klinger catching the bouquet. All right, Russell. So what did you think of this one?
I liked it. I haven't seen it in a while. I went back and watched it again, and it's one of my favorite themes. We've chatted before. I like the episodes where they involve the indigenous people, the Koreans that they're surrounded by. And this one was especially interesting for me because it sets up the idea that all of the racist and hateful people are not the angry, you know, Southern people throwing stones or at little black children. They're you and me looking just like us until they let something slide. And that I remember being a very emotional punch, very strong emotional punch as a kid, thinking, oh, she's perfectly fine. And no, she's not. Yeah. You know, and it was really well set up.
Yeah, I mean, they don't hint at all throughout the episode that she has this problem. It's only till the end, and then when Hawkeye's just like, yeah, of course we did this, and then when she uses that word, and I even hated using that word in the summary. It's really jarring. I mean, you're just like, whoa, and then Hawkeye is just kind of like looking at her like, what? And one of the reasons I love MASH is, of course, like I look up to these characters. I like these people. These are my childhood heroes. And Hawkeye has the ability to tell Lieutenant Hoffman, basically, go F yourself. I love it when he steals back the wine. Like, that's such a great little – I forgot my wine. But, I mean, I've had moments in my life where people have said pretty racist things to me, and I have done my best to counteract them and be like, what did you just say to me? I haven't always done as good a job as I hoped I would. So sometimes it just makes me so uncomfortable that I just back away. I've never let anyone know that I agree with those sentiments, but I haven't pushed back as hard as I should have in some cases. But I really appreciate that Hawkeye is just immediately like, they were about to have sex, and this is something he's clearly been sort of angling for throughout the whole episode, because he's really attracted to her. She talks about how much she loves golf, and that turn really turns him on and stuff. But he is willing to draw the line and say that, I love that line about, there's a lot of unappetizing ideas in there and I can't take the mix. It's everything you want Hawkeye to be in that moment.
Yeah, and I enjoy – this is one of those episodes where the A plot and the B plots really come together, because mm-hmm. you got him basically the Lothario wanting to have sex with this beautiful, fascinating woman, and they have this cute little date at the Jeep – you know, and they're talking and they're having a good time. And it's like, oh, this is nice. This is nice. Oh, and he keeps getting interrupted by, you know, Walker or Burt Young as Willis. And then it's like, oh, they get together and it veers off in a totally, you know, the first time you watch it, I'm guessing nobody saw that coming. You think, oh, that's not what I thought was going to happen here. So it was very well done.
I love it when he sends Klinger over to bring the food, and then we cut, and Klinger's just sitting there eating the chicken with her and talking about like women's stuff, talking about like off the shoulder outfits. Like, he's just so comfortable immediately, and he's sitting there with his leg over his chair, like he's made himself at home, even though this woman does not want this guy there. I just think that's hysterical. But yeah, you're right. It's, I like it when the A plot and the B plot dovetail, and of course they do. Yeah. And it's Burt Young playing Lieutenant Willis. Burt Young, that guy is just like a walking, like, ball of dirt, you know, like, just in everything he's ever, I mean, everyone knows him, of course. He played Paulie in the Rocky movies. I mean, he's also in Chinatown, The Gambler, The Pope of Greenwich Village, Back to School. I looked him up on IMDb. He, not only is he still alive, he has 7 projects in production currently right now. So he keeps busy, but I mean, he's always a guy you hire when you need someone to just be like a hot mess. And he just and so when he wakes up after he's been drugged and his hair is all askew, and it's like he's just perfect for that guy. Like, you just think he probably doesn't smell that great. He smells like coffee and cigarettes or something. So it's kind of funny that little detail where they drug him and then he wakes up and he's got the bra hanging on him, that's totally out of the movie. They stole that joke right out of the movie, because they do. That's what Hawkeye and Trapper do to a guy in the movie. And except in the movie, you actually see the pictures of him with the Korean girls and stuff like that. I mean, presumably in this episode, it's faked, because they probably have to go a little more genteel for the TV show. But it's lifted right out of the movie. I love that Lieutenant Walker like comes to Hawkeye for help. Everyone turns to Hawkeye for help. I just think that's
well. See, and that was one of my common points, because it was like, it was very clearly a Hawkeye episode. But it's like, wait, so why is Trapper not quite such a social warrior as Hawkeye? It just seems like, he's there at the beginning, he leaves, goes out on a date or does something, and he comes back at the end. And you're like, wait, why does Willis have to only talk to Hawkeye? You know, and there's some bit about 4 officers have to sign a form on the profile against or recommending Walker or something. And it's like, well, wait, Trapper should be involved in this. Why is he not? I didn't get that it was only a Hawkeye is everybody's best pal, especially when he's clearly – preoccupied with trying to have a date with Hoffman.
I mean, it's that after last week's episode was Kim, which was a very Trapper-centric episode, but those are kind of the rarities. Like, every so often they give Trapper something, and then it kind of like reverts to the mean, and they just give everything back to Hawkeye. Hawkeye's always the guy that's sort of handling everything. And there is the subplot about that that Radar is involved in this, and that gets Hot Lips and Frank mad. Because then they have that whole scene. And we'll get to that in a moment, because that whole scene with Hot Lips and Henry and Frank is one of my favorite things. It's just funny from beginning to end.
Yeah, me too. That was my favorite scene too.
I love the ongoing gags in this episode about the movies that are never showing up, the John Wayne movies that don't show up. And they talk about, you know, what do we have? And he says, The Thing That Ain't the Bronx, which I wish was a real movie. That sounds like such a great movie. And like Henry says, I could watch that every night. And then they talk about Bonzo Runs for President, which is not a movie. There's bedtime for Bonzo. But I have to, and I've mentioned this in previous episodes, I have to figure that the constant references to Bonzo movies was Larry Gelbart or Gene Reynolds' dig at Ronald Reagan, who was then governor of California.
And was
getting ready to run for president. He ran against Gerald Ford in 1976. So I always figure by mentioning Bonzer went for president, it's just a shot at Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, I noted that too. It's like, wait, is I have no idea. I've never seen any of the Bonzo movies, but I knew there were a few of them, and so I went in and looked, and it's like, okay, so Bonzo Goes to College was made, but I don't think Ronald Reagan was in that one. But those were the two, and there was no Bonzo Runs for President, although Bonzo himself did run. I think what I saw was that he tried to run in 68, too, but he didn't get very far with Nixon.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I love all that. If you only knew from MASH, you would think the Bonzo movies are like the Marvel movies. You know, there's like 20 of them or something. No, it's just the two. There's a couple of really sharp lines here. I love the bit about where Radar refers to the local indigenous personnel as LIPs. And Hawkeye has that line about LIPs, and he's sort of like chuffed that they've been reduced to this acronym. And he says, oh, the Army has to remind us that no one is human, which reminds me a lot of George Carlin's kind of work. George Carlin was big on that, about how language is used to hide and evade and dehumanize. He has that whole bit about shell shock, about how it's been turned into PTSD, and it's all the humanity's been drained out of it. But I'm like, that's interesting. That line is before George Carlin hit on that kind of material. But I think that's interesting that it's like, we are reducing people to just this bloodless acronym, and it makes it sort of easier to deal with. There's another bit where, and I had to look this up, where Trapper, when Hawkeye tells Trapper that he got a handshake out of Lieutenant Hoffman, and Trapper's like, what is she, a weirdo? And Hawkeye says, a woman who shook like 20 guys' hands was mentioned in Kraft Ebbing. And I never knew what that was, and I had to look that up. That Kraft Ebbing was a guy that researched sex. He was kind of like a Kinsey. So that was just a little bit of a little contemporary reference that, again, I had no idea. I had to look it up. But I thought that was a nice little jab that, they're so horrified that a woman would offer a handshake to a man. They're just completely perplexed by that.
Well, that's funny that you say that, because I have that down to Kraft Ebbing, Richard von Kraft Ebbing.
There you go, right. Yeah.
Sexuality in 1886. Yeah. And I looked up Sarah Bernhardt because Hawkeye made some passing reference to, the one-legged, dancer or something. I'm like, that's got to be a real thing, right? Yep. It's a real person. Yeah, she was a Broadway and, ingenue, famous woman from, early 1900s. And I'd heard her name before, I guess, but I didn't really just knew who she was.
Yeah, I love all that. I love all those references. I learned so much from the show, just like looking up all these things and stuff like that. The scene with Hawkeye and the scene with Radar, Henry, Margaret, and Frank, where they come in to complain, that is a masterpiece of writing. Because of course it comes in and Margaret is the one making the speech, but she's acting like she's talking for Frank, and Henry just tunes Margaret out at a certain point, and he's fascinated that Frank has never said anything. He hasn't said one thing. And I just love that he's like, it's amazing, Frank. I never saw your lips move once. And then he says, Frank, you're going to make any sound, even a gurgling sound would help. Because, and then he says something like, are you going to just stay quiet till the birds come and cover you up with leaves? I just love that he's so focused on Frank, and he's ignoring how mad Margaret is. I find every line they give Henry is hysterical.
Yeah, that's my favorite line in there too. Is he says something about watch your language, Frank, or I may have to hit her in the mouth.
it's so good. I just love it that Henry is not taking Margaret seriously. That's what I love. It reminds me kind of a little bit of Monty Python, where there's just one person in a scene is so focused on this little small point, and they're ignoring everything else. And he's completely ignoring Margaret. He's just going on and on and on about that. I find that absolutely hysterical. And you said that's your favorite line in the episode is I'm going to punch her in the mouth.
He's watching Frank and, speaking to Frank. And it's just like, this is comic gold. It made me laugh.
My favorite line, I'll jump to it. My favorite joke in the episode is when Henry's so tired and he's got his head down on his desk. And Radar says, Major Houlihan and Major Burns here to see you. And he says, tell them I've died or whatever. And then he goes like, ahem. And without looking up, Henry goes, they're here, aren't they? He says it right in front of them. Just so completely disrespects them, which I find hysterical. I want to ask you what you feel about the scene where Trapper is giving Hawkeye a haircut. That whole I know that they didn't improvise that much on MASH a lot. Like, it was really pretty heavily scripted, but it feels improvised because the conversation just kind of meanders between the two of them, and it almost feels like Wayne Rogers and Alan Alda are just kind of BSing through the scene. I don't know. Yeah. Did you get that read?
Yeah, I did. I wrote it down saying, you know, the whole tonic and the fun, the friendliness of it just seemed like, I don't know if it was not scripted. I'm guessing from what I've read from Larry Gelbart is like everything was scripted, but it just seemed really, really nice. It was setting up that these two guys are really friends and that they're good guys.
Yeah, I don't think I'd want to get a haircut from somebody that doesn't know how to do it, but I guess they don't have a barber at the 477. So.
Yeah, and that's funny too, because I thought I did write that down. It's like, wait, we've heard or seen somewhere that there's a barber, because I remember distinctly that being once mm-hmm. some in the movie or somewhere there was a barber.
Yeah, yeah. They've been much like the dentist. They've been slowly getting rid of all the side people. It's just, yeah, you know, it's just the doctors at this point. I do find it funny that there is a moment where they clink glasses and one of them says, I think it's Hawkeye and Trapper, one of them says happy days and the other one says cheers, which is just an accidental mention of two different TV shows back to back. There's a line that Lieutenant Willis has, which I feel is grim, but also accurate, is when after they frame him and he finally agrees to Walker, giving Walker the permission to marry this woman. And he says, let's see him get an apartment back in the States with a Korean wife, which is really dark. And it's actually something that they played up on, that they followed up on after MASH. Not that many people saw after MASH, but I have. And there are episodes in after MASH where Klinger experiences discrimination because he's married to Sun Yi. And, you know, it's a sad thing. It's obviously a real thing, but the way that Willis just so blithely says that, like, yeah, let's see him get an apartment back in the States. Like, you know, what are we all fighting for then? You know, like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. Well, you know, let me tell you, one of the reasons I wanted to do this episode is because it's very close to home, and I hope I don't get too emotional about it, but this basic situation happened to me. Mm. When I lived in Japan, the Japanese government basically said, you know, you're not allowed to marry one of our people. And I had to jump through all sorts of red tape to prove that I wasn't marrying her to get a visa or to get a job or you know, whatever. And it's, from what I understand, it's even worse if the foreigner is a woman, because then it's like, oh, you're just a prostitute or a chippy, which I had to look up.
They say that in this episode.
Yeah, Henry says something like chippy, and I'm like, I've never heard that word before in my life, but clearly it's an old-time term for a prostitute. Anyway, some of the strippers and some of the women who work in Japan get visas because they marry their bosses or they marry some, you know, men who are paid to marry them. And so it's a culture of you're not good enough and you're not marrying out of love. You're doing it for some sort of economic situation. And it was very, what's the word I want to use? Emotionally trying to have to prove that, you know, my love is just as good as your love just because I'm not an Asian person. I'm not a Japanese person. The idea that Willis is sent here by the U.S. Army Criminal Investigation Division because it's possible that this Kim is trying to finagle a way to the States or something. It's true. I mean, there are people, and we see an episode later where there are some prostitutes trying to use marrying a U.S. Army guy to get back to the States. So it's a thing. But the whole idea that it takes forever to go through the paperwork to get permission to get married is frustrating as hell. And the fact that that happened in the 50s, was told about in the 70s, and I lived it in the 90s, means it's probably still happening. And that's sad. And then, of course, when I do get permission, I remember one time I went and I had the equivalent of this kind of Willis-Hawkeye conversation. And they say, well, all right, if you really do love your wife, hurry up and get her pregnant to prove that you're in love with her.
Jesus.
I have to prove that I'm having sex with my wife because that'll help me get a visa quicker.
Oh my God.
So yeah, this shit still is happening. So it when I saw this again, I'm like, oh, I want to talk about this one, because it's a little weird that they talk about, oh, it takes forever to get permission. It doesn't. I mean, and I think the military angle is maybe a little bit more dramatic in the episode than necessary, dramatic effect maybe. You just have to do all the forms, and I'm sure Radar could have pulled out all those forms and gotten them done quickly. There was one throwaway line about, oh, four officers have to sign it. And I'm like, so what's the problem? Because, you know, Father Mulcahy's the lieutenant, isn't he? So that he's an officer.
Yeah, then, I'm sure he'd do it, yeah.
Yeah, so then it's Trapper, Hawkeye, and Henry, or unless it can't be the commanding officer. Mm. But then, I don't understand that problem. And then I didn't understand why Hot Lips and Frank had a problem with it. You know, it just seems like they were being racist. And I hate to say that.
I assume, on Frank's part, I assume that that's what it is.
Yeah, it just seems weird that, you know, if they're in love, it's not, you know, you want to be safe. And I understand the reasoning behind some of these regulations. You don't want, you know, what's his name to bring back prostitutes to and make money off of them. But he, Walker, and Kim were clearly together and wanted to stay together. So what was the problem? And it kind of upset me to watch this episode. So that's why I wanted to talk about it.
Wow. Yeah. MASH did address this in subsequent episodes from every conceivable angle. But I mean, clearly in this one, in with Walker, they set up that he clearly does love this woman. I mean, he's a little shifty in that, you know, he had the cook marry them just so he could get her into bed, which is not, you know, like, okay, that's not great. But he does love her, and he wants to bring the child back with him, you know, back to the States. So it's like, okay, at the very least, you know, he's trying. He screwed up, and now he is trying to do the right thing. And it was kind of funny. Right. I looked up this actor, Jerry Zaks, who plays Phil Walker. He was in a bunch of TV. He didn't do a whole lot of acting. He was in the New Temperatures Rising show, which is a show I never fail to mention every time somebody's in it. But then he went and became a director, and he directed episodes of Frasier, Everybody Loves Raymond, and he directed the 1996 movie Marvin's Room with Leonardo DiCaprio and Meryl Streep, which is like, wow, you know, like that's some heavy hitters, you know. He hasn't done anything in a little while, but I thought that was kind of strange how you sort of go from a sort of a bit part in a MASH episode and then not really have much of an acting career, and then you became kind of this heavy hitter director. That's kind of amazing.
Well, that sounds kind of like Gene Reynolds' trajectory too, though. I mean, he was a B rank or C rank actor in the 40s and 50s, and then he turned into a screenwriter and a director. And well, a producer.
True. Yeah, that's true.
So maybe he was like, hey, dude, if you don't see this, then follow my lead, you know?
Yeah, maybe so. Corrine Camacho, who plays Lieutenant Hoffman, and she is – she does a good job. I mean, I wouldn't want I would imagine it's probably an unflattering role to play, is that, you know, you're the one who's going to have to say this horrid thing. But she's good at it. She has palpable chemistry with Alan Alda, I would say. Yeah. They seem like an actual decent couple, because she's a bit of a smart ass, which of course would attract her to him and stuff like that. And it really does kind of it, you know. People that are – there are a lot of people who are racist, and they're racist very, you know, very obviously from the beginning, you know.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people – yeah. There are a lot of people who are not, who, you know, seem like relatively okay people, and then you wander onto this one subject, and all of a sudden they say stuff, and you're like, wait a minute, what? And she does a good job at that. Like, she doesn't telegraph it. It's only during their big clinch at the end where she starts – you know, she says, I just want to get all the facts, and he's kind of like, what are you talking about? Like, what do you care? Like, hey, I'm here. We're ready to get together. What are you going on and on about? So I think she does a good job. She was on shows like Medical Center, Mannix, SWAT, Cannon, Wonder Woman, The Rockford Files. She passed away in 2010. She didn't – mostly was just kind of a jobber in terms of coming on to TV and doing guest spots. Writing-wise, Carl Kleinschmidt, he only wrote two episodes of MASH. This one – and Sometimes You Hear the Bullet, which is like batting 1,000. I can't imagine why he never did any more than this. These are two classic episodes. His other credits are Gomer Pyle, That Girl. Probably did not address racism that much on Gomer Pyle. The Courtship of Eddie's Father. And then, of course, he wrote for the Brady Bunch Variety Hour, which had to be, I don't know, probably an easier gig than writing for MASH. But, you know, who knows?
Yeah, that's a very wide spectrum of writing, shall we say.
I wrote that episode of MASH where Hawkeye's friend dies, that one everybody knows. Oh, now I'm going to write this musical number for Jan and Alice the Maid. You know, like, okay, all right, whatever, TNT, got to pay the bills. There's a couple little fun little kind of goofs in this episode. First of all, at one point the PA announces tonight's movie is Flying Leathernecks with John Wayne, Ward Bond, and Maureen O'Hara. Ward Bond and Maureen O'Hara are not in Flying Leathernecks, but, you know, you always figure that's just the PA guys not being careful. And then we see at one point Hawkeye's reading a book, Bad Man's Roost, by Robert Trevathan. That book was not published until 1963. So Hawkeye got that book from the same place Radar got his copy of The Avengers. It's just this sort of weird bubble. But, I mean, yeah, I think this is TV shows that address real-life issues, it can become a little after-school special-y if it's not done right. You know, this is a very special episode of Different Strokes. But this one, I think this hits this topic really well because, as you say, it's an A plot and a B plot, and then it dovetails at the end, and we see what the issue is with some people, like why there is this resistance. I mean, Willis has that line about, let's see her get an apartment back in the States, and then we see that Lieutenant Hoffman, well, she's going to be one of the kind of people that would object to Kim, you know, moving back to the United States and getting an apartment with Phil Walker. Like, she's part of the problem. So I think this is a really sensational show.
Yeah, it was very well done, I thought. And then there was the idea that the racism is hidden is just more frustrating for me, because at least Frank and Margaret are up front and saying, you know, we can't do this, it can't allow it. And then you've got the Willis and the Huffman saying, oh, well, you know, simply I'm in a position of power to say no, so I'm going to. You know, it's just like frustrating and disheartening and a very emotional episode, I thought.
Yeah, I said, and I do, and I get it. As I said, I love that Hawkeye comes back in to grab the bottle of wine. It's just such an extra dig at her of like, oh, I forgot my wine. And he yanks the bottle out. And, you know, you have to wonder what happened to Lieutenant Hoffman after this. Did she just get transferred out? Did she become a pariah on the 7th, 4th, 7th, 7th? We'll never know, because, of course, we never see her again. But
That's one of the things about MASH, that even though it lasted so long, it's frustrating to see that there was a very strong lack of continuity between some of these episodes and some of the characters. You know, you would think that she would have become Margaret's one of, you know, favorites, you know, after this episode. It's like, oh, we're on the same political plane. But then, you know, she's never cast or shown again and gone.
Yeah. Well, it's other than, Nurse Kelly and Ginger, which we see her. We see Joe Dessa Cleveland briefly as Ginger. Yeah, not a lot of continuity among the nurses. But, yeah, so yeah. Lieutenant Hoffman got shipped out and went back probably to work for Joe McCarthy or something back in the States. So I think that is going to do it for LIP, Local Indigenous Personnel. I think it's just a total winner. Like, it's a complete classic of an episode. So, Russell, thanks for coming on, man. I always love talking to you.
Yeah, I enjoy talking MASH anytime, and I want to be invited back, so please don't forget what I said about nurses' continuity. Make me a recurring guest star, please.
Absolutely. You will be back. You'll be absolutely our Sydney Freeman. You come back every year, no doubt about that. So so where can people find you on the internet?
Well, right now I'm spending most of my time in the 31st century. I'm one of the editors of the Legion of Super Bloggers, which is legionofsuperbloggers.blogspot.com, and we have new content every weekday, Monday through Friday. And so check us out if you're a fan of the Legion of Superheroes. There will be something of interest for you there.
Very cool. All right. Go for it. I enjoy the Legion of Super Bloggers, even though, you know, I'm not a Legion fan, but you and I did that Treasury cast together. We talked about the Legion. That turned out really well. So I'm slowly making my way, you know, I'm moving off that Legion hate and moving into something else. So awesome. Again, thank you for coming by again. Everybody, if you want to listen to back episodes of the show, go to the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com, or you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher. And we're always talking MASH on Twitter, which is at MASH477Cast. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And until next week, that is all. We'll be right back.
this is the last straw.
Remind me to order more straws.